Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. The co-founder of Apple and industry innovator Steve Jobs passing away this week, and while his legacy is likely to resonate for a long time to come, what was it that made this man such a profound influence on Apple and the computer industry as a whole? To talk about that, I'm joined by a man who met Steve Jobs several times and has an extensive IT background himself, Dr. Nathaniel Borenstein, chief scientist at email management firm Mimecast, based here in Michigan. He's also the co-creator of the Mime email standard and previously co-founded First Virtual Holdings and NetPOS. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, before we talk about your interactions with Steve Jobs, for those who think that iPads and iPods are his greatest contributions, how would you describe the larger impact of his efforts on the world of technology?
Well, I think what was really unique about him was that he didn't settle for good enough. He had this concept people sometimes made fun of insanely great technology, and he always had a vision of the best technology possible, and he didn't compromise. He would rather have fewer sales at a higher price and have a perfect product, or as close to perfect as he could get, than even make more money. Remarkably, he's one of the few captains of the industry I ever met who was not driven primarily by money.
Now, you met Steve in the 1980s. Apple was already founded at that time, but a lot of the technology was just beginning to be developed. What was the nature of your meeting, and how would you describe his personal demeanor?
Well, he was intense, alert, and incredibly quick. One of the things that he was famous for was sensing very quickly what the right answer was, what the hot technology was going to be, and if he saw something that that he thought was important, he wouldn't waste time with a study group and having a task force decide. He would just jump in and try to get it. So the first time I met him, my group was demonstrating some multimedia email technology we'd built at Carnegie Mellon University, and about halfway through the presentation, he tried to hire my whole team away. And that didn't work, but he ended up building a very similar product on the next system called Nextmail. And so he just, at a time when I was trying to convince people that multimedia mail, by which I mean including pictures and things like that and email, I was still trying to convince most people that it was a good idea, he instantly got it and had to have it. And that was the way he was. He would make very quick decisions that were nearly always right.
You say that one of Steve's least mentioned talents was his mastery of email, which is something you yourself know quite a lot about. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, email has a tendency to take over our lives. And even as someone who's dedicated most of my career to email technology, I struggle with email like anyone else. I sort of judge how well I'm doing by how low I can get my backlog, and all too often I'll fail to answer email as promptly as I ought to, simply for feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume. That didn't appear to happen to him. He was legendary for answering his email really promptly, even from some total strangers with nutty ideas.
I'm talking to Dr. Nathaniel Borenstein. He's the chief scientist at the email management firm Mimecast. You know, one of the interesting things about Steve Jobs was his interest in getting involved in the little details of projects. That's something many managers and leaders avoid choosing to do because they focus on the big picture instead. How do you think that approach benefited Apple and his general approach towards technology?
Well, certainly it benefited all of us who use his products in ways we can't easily detect. He was famous for once not liking the way a screw head was shaped and sending it back and having a whole bunch more work done just to replace that. He was also known to have a whole factory built to produce the kind of component that he wanted. And that's, I think, what's really behind the phenomenal loyalty and the rabid, almost zealotry of Apple fanboys, is that if you're sensitive to design, if you're sensitive to the detail, it's hard to miss in a lot of those Apple products. And so, to some extent, that's spread to other parts of the industry, but it's still pretty rare. And as you say, very few chief executives are likely to take the time to get into that level of detail, but frankly, I wish they would.
Steve Jobs was a college dropout, something unique in his field. With your academic background, was there anything that you think he would have likely gained if he had remained in school, or did he simply not need it?
I wish I could say yes. As someone who spent a lot of time in academia, I wish I could say it would have made him even more successful, but it's hard to imagine him being even more successful. I would caution that most people who drop out of school with a good idea don't end up like Steve Jobs. So I wouldn't encourage just about anyone who's currently in college to drop out simply because of his example. He was a unique case. But he also was at that point living at a unique moment. It was just possible to build a computer for a cost that would allow you to have it in your home, a personal computer. And he saw the first of those, which were amazing but horrible to use. And if he had waited till he had finished college, he would have missed that moment, jumping in and making a really good one. So I guess it's sometimes right to quit college is the moral there, but I wouldn't overgeneralize.
You know, it seems that the IT industry is full of brilliant people. You have to be smart simply to work in the field. What made a guy like Steve Jobs so different than the others?
Well, I think a part of it is that he was a polymath or a Renaissance man, whichever term you prefer. And by that I mean he could get down into the details of a technical discussion and hold his own to a remarkable level of detail. And yet at the same time, he had an aesthetic sense that was second to none and a phenomenal work ethic and work habits. And so he had the same basic starting genius intellect that you'll find in quite a few people in the industry, but then he supplemented it with a combination of things that you're just not going to see very often.
Something interesting about Steve Jobs is that he called LSD, quote, one of the two or three most important things I've done in my life, saying that LSD helped open his mind to the possibilities of the coming digital age. What kind of insight does the statement give to his character and life experience?
Well, you do have to place it in the context of his times. People who were in college in the early 70s were, I think, more likely than not to have tried various drugs. And I don't want anyone to get the impression that he was a heavy drug user at any point, and certainly later in his life. But LSD is a special drug, and people don't recognize, I think, sometimes the line between use and abuse. There's been a lot of work with the life-changing potentials of LSD. It's been one of the most effective therapies ever found for helping alcoholics to stop using alcohol, and similarly with heroin addicts. It's had tremendous effect with helping the dying come to accept their lot. And I think it's for the same reason that it affected Steve the way it did. It makes you drop some barriers and face a sort of larger picture of the world than you usually look at. And sometimes that's life-transforming, as it was for him. Sometimes that's comforting, as it is for people who take it in hospice. And sometimes it's disastrous, which is why, you know, you should always do it in the company of a trained guide, if possible.
I mean, 56 years old is such a young age to die for this man. Do you feel that had he lived 30 more years, that his impact would have been far more profound? Or do you think he'd made in a sense the majority of his mark already?
I find it hard to imagine him not continuing to innovate the way he did. In the last few years, he was working on something that really hasn't been seen to completion, which is the reinvention of television. And, you know, he's the kind of guy who could decide, I'm going to reinvent television and, given enough time, pull it off. I understand Apple's going to continue working on that, and I wish them luck because they have a lot of good ideas. I have no idea what he would have done next, but I sure wish I had been able to see it.
Finally, considering where we are in our technological development, are we at a point now where everything is just too big and corporatized to see another Steve Jobs come along in the IT world?
I don't know about another Steve Jobs per se. One of the things you have to look at is when a new industry is being born, that's the moment when these titans really emerge. So you're the people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon emerged just when the Internet became a commercially feasible place to build a business. So I think what you have to have to ask today is, where are things just opening up similarly? And the obvious answer is with mobile applications, with the myriad applications people are beginning to build for smartphones. I think it's quite possible that somebody in a garage right now is building an app that's going to not merely be successful, but be the start of an empire, perhaps even to rival Steve Jobs.
Dr. Nathaniel Bornstein, chief scientist at the email management firm Mimecast, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. And